Welcome to Allocation Disorder. I am Sam Staskel, joined as always by my good friend and colleague, Paul Tenorio. We've got a good show for you guys today. We're going to talk about quite a few different things. We're going to talk about Gonzalo Pineda. He has officially been hired by Atlanta United as their fourth head coach ever and third since the start of the 2019 season, which is kind of wild. And we're going to talk a little bit about how that move might affect the broader MLS coaching and GM carousel, which looks like it's going to be pretty dang active here coming up. We're going to talk about some Leagues Cup and the whole debate going on around that tournament, and a few other things, a few other noteworthy things, some transfer data from the last window, MLS spending some money in ways that other leagues are not, which is pretty interesting. But Paul, before we get into any of that, how you doing today, man? How's the wide world of soccer treating you these days?
You know, as it always does, it lifts you up and a lot of times it smacks you back down. We live the life, my friend.
Let's dive deeper on that.
Anytime, let's
put you on the couch.
Anytime, Sam, that I start to get angry over the little annoying things of our job, I remember that I get paid to watch soccer and I'm like, all right.
Yeah.
I mean, I also have the right words, which is the hard part. I'm not great at it.
The right words.
You know, that part's hard. But the soccer watching part is not. So I'm very fortunate.
Yes, we both are in that way, except for the writing words part.
Man, yeah, that part.
What a drag. Huh?
That part.
Oh. Talking words, way better. Way better.
As all listeners of Allocation Disorder know, I'm much better at talking words. I don't mispronounce words. I don't, you know.
You're doing a great job right now.
Yeah, I don't mind blank on what words to pick. I am just. It's
keep
easy
it going.
Going. Easy going.
Keep it going.
You know?
You're doing great. You're doing great. Not stumbling at all.
No.
You're killing it. You're talking words so good.
I'm very. I'm a good talker of words. Okay, let's move on.
All right. We'll see if that holds true for the rest of this show. We'll see if you can improve on your talking words performance or if that's just going to be the level today. Anyway, let's talk Gonzalo Pineda, former Seattle Sounders assistant, is now the Atlanta United head coach. He is taking over effective pretty soon. He tested positive for COVID recently, which is why he was not on the bench for the Sounders League's Cup game the other night against Tigres. But he took the job and was introduced via Zoom on Thursday. We talked a little bit about this last week, I believe. I think that I had broken the news by the time of recording that they were interested in looking at him. But what do you make of this hire? What do you think it says for Atlanta? What do you think of Pineda? What should people know about it?
I think it's a good hire on the surface, right? We don't know enough, I think, about Pineda as a manager because he's never been the manager, right? So anytime you move up from the assistant seat to the guy in charge, there's a learning curve that happens. I'll look back and say, I remember when Chris Armas was an assistant under Jesse Marsh. I heard universally positive things about Chris Armas. So many people I spoke to around Red Bulls thought he was going to be an amazing head coach. He was the connective tissue between the coaching staff and the locker room. Guys loved him. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Jesse was also a very good communicator.
That first half season,
yeah,
he had a better record than Marsh did.
Right. And it didn't quite work out for Chris Armas, neither at Red Bulls nor at Toronto FC. And so, you know, we're going to learn a little bit more about Gonzalo Pineda. From the conversations I've had about Pineda early on, what I've learned is that he was considered kind of the tactical mind, in a way, behind Brian Schmetzer. I'm not trying to take away too much from Brian Schmetzer because he's won a lot with Seattle.
Right.
But that Pineda worked a lot on the tactics. That was a big part of what he did.
He had a strong voice on that staff.
Correct. Right? And also I heard that, you know, he is a very headstrong individual, which I think is going to be important for him in Atlanta. It's a very political club. There are incredibly strong personalities above him and in the locker room as well.
Yeah.
And so his experience as a Mexico international, started 3 games in a World Cup, his experience winning a supporter shield as a player in MLS, his experience going to 3 MLS Cups as an assistant coach and winning one of them are all going to be important. And he has to have confidence But what will it be like when he's the one in the press conference after a tough loss, or when Joseph Martinez stomps off the practice field for the first time? We don't know yet. Yeah. He hasn't had to be the guy there yet.
Yeah. And I think political is a good way to put it, right? And the most important constituent might be that guy that you just mentioned, Joseph Martinez.
For sure.
Right. If you want to look back to the last two coaches in Atlanta, in Heinze and in DeBoer, right? A big part of the reason why it didn't work out for them was because Joseph wasn't really on board, right? Like, we saw it with DeBoer in his first year in 2019. It wasn't just Joseph that wasn't on board, right? But some other big personalities in that locker room, they didn't like how Atlanta was set up to play. And they made that known publicly, right? Leandro Gonzalez-Perez, I think, came out with some comments. I don't remember if Joseph Martinez did or not. I think he may have, though, right around the All-Star game. Right about this point 2 years ago, basically. After that, they changed how they played. And the results kept coming in. The second half of the season was quite good under DeBoer in 2019. But then you fast forward, right, to Heinze. And we know what happened there with the drama between Joseph and Heinze, where Martinez was barred from training. And there was this whole thing about, were they drinking water? Were they not drinking water?
The question is that more Joseph or more Heinze, right? Did Heinze identify the alpha male in the room and say, I'm going to take you down so that everyone knows I'm the alpha? Or was that another Joseph-driven, I don't want to say Joseph-driven problem, but certainly we could say that Joseph is not always, he's got a big personality.
Yeah,
he even
he's
walked
a star
off the field,
striker, man.
You know, with Tata, the training field, he was not easy to deal with. Tata just knew how to manage the personalities. I felt like Heinze did the opposite. Instead of trying to manage Joseph, he said, I'm in charge. I'm going to show everyone I'm in charge. And he ended up losing that battle. So that's what Pineda is going to have to figure out. How do I manage this guy? And
that's
why we call him a manager.
Now, Seattle has some big players too, right? So it's not like he's walking into this with zero experience. But it's different from when you're the assistant and you can kind of put the arm around a guy, right? Versus 100%. When you're the head coach and you got to lay down the law. So how he manages down is going to be really interesting. And then how he manages up, right, to Bocanegra, Carlos Bocanegra and Darren Eales, also going to be fascinating. That was kind of, you know, the managing up didn't go so great with Tata, right? And that's part of the reason maybe, well, I shouldn't even say that. I think he was going to go after they won no matter what. But, so that's going to be fascinating too. He's, you know, he strikes me as a guy, first head coaching job, younger coach, given a good opportunity here, you know, a guy that came up through MLS, as someone who will be a decent team player in that way with the front office, I would imagine. Now, this is all speculation and just guessing, right? But we'll see. You know, I think I'm excited for him to get this chance. I like the fact that he has MLS experience. I think it has the potential to be a nice, like, kind of stabilizing. He has the potential to be a nice stabilizing force for Atlanta, which needs some of that. So I don't know. I'm intrigued. We'll see, though. Like you said, we don't have enough information, really.
Yeah, we should point out, you worked under two managers who are known as being man managers, right? Ziggy Schmidt was known for keeping the locker room relatively happy. I mean, he had his scuffles, but he coached for a really, really, really long time.
Yeah.
And Brian Schmetzer, definitely known for kind of, you know, he's kind of like the math teacher, but he gets along with people and they all buy in to the vision, right? They buy in, and that's why they're so, part of the reason why they're so successful.
He didn't coach with Ziggy, right? He just played under him, I believe.
Correct. He played under him. So he does have, but he saw how Ziggy approached the locker room, from what I was told. You know, he had a good idea of
the American
way, right? It's different coming up playing in Mexico. It just is. It's different. And it's different in Latin America and South America, you know? And so I think that it's a good blend of a significant chunk of his playing experience comes in Mexico, both on the club level and internationally as well. He understands the pressures that exist in that world. He also has been a big part of a hugely successful MLS franchise. And when we talk about MLS experience,
the most successful.
Yeah. What I always say is, why aren't more teams hiring people out of Seattle and Toronto? Trying to get ideas from those clubs who have been successful. It's starting to happen a bit more now, right? Chris Henderson goes to Miami. You know, there have been Bez Bachenko went from Toronto to Columbus.
Come on, Paul. Speak good, buddy.
I'm trying to speak good. Pineda now obviously is going to Atlanta. So Sean Rubio was in Toronto FC in the front office with Bez Bachenko. He went to Austin FC.
Claudio Reyna, NYCFC to Austin FC.
Yeah, so you're starting to see some of that movement from the more successful clubs in Seattle and Toronto especially. I think that matters. I think Pineda learned a lot being in that club and in that atmosphere. My thing is, can he make it about soccer? If he can make it about soccer in Atlanta, he's going to be more successful. If we start to get pulled into the same stuff that's occurred, you know, the behind the scenes, pull back the curtains, power dynamics that have gone on in Atlanta, there's going to be problems. And on top of that, this roster isn't that great. It's not that great. So
it's not that bad, though.
It's not that bad, but it's not that great. There's some fixes that are going to have to happen. Anything, if they start winning in this half of the season, that's gravy, okay? That's gravy. Right. They have some fixes they have to make to the roster going into next year. If they can, again, if you can make it about soccer, if you can get those decisions right, if you can get them playing free and good soccer again, he's going to be fine. It hasn't been about just the soccer in Atlanta for a long time.
Yeah. Well, I think part of the reason is because the soccer hasn't been good, right?
Yeah, that's a good. Yeah, that's true. Sometimes it has been, but not for a while. Not for a while.
Before we move on, I just want to say one just tremendous detail from this entire that came out on Thursday about this hire. The in-person meeting between Pineda and Carlos Bocanegra and Darren Eales and Arthur Blank happened somewhere off the coast of Alaska on Arthur Blank's yacht, which I'm willing to say is probably the first time that an MLS coach has had his interview on a yacht off the coast of Alaska, or actually any soccer coach for that matter. I'll go that far.
Let's not, Roman Abramovich is the,
Alaska? Maybe somewhere in the Mediterranean.
Well, for him, he would say it's off the coast of Russia, not off the coast of Alaska.
You think he's docking the yacht and
You never know. Maybe he's doing spin up
in Vladivostok.
We don't know. I don't want to completely
outside
rule
Saint
it out.
Petersburg,
that's all I'm saying.
Perhaps. What's the Arctic port? I don't even. Is it Yakutsk? I don't know. I'm just taking things from Risk, the board game, right now.
This episode of Allocation Disorder has been brought to you by Risk.
That's right. The game of world domination or something. Never start a land war in Asia. May Gonzalo Pineda remember that as Atlanta United head coach. So this is, one of a series of moves that started kind of the coaching carousel, right? It's already happening. It's already moving. That merry-go-round is going around and around and around already. So we have Pineda in Atlanta. Up in Toronto, obviously they dismissed Armas earlier this year. They made the news this week. Javier Perez, who was sort of, I don't know if he was ever technically labeled as interim head coach, but that was essentially his position. They announced earlier this week that he'll be the head coach for the remainder of 2021 at minimum. We have some GM searches that are ongoing in San Jose, in Cincinnati. So there's, what is that? I guess just two jobs up for grabs right now, maybe another one up for grabs at the end of the season. I'm sure there will be more. And Paul, you and I have done a little bit of reporting on this, on potential openings and coaches and GMs who might be coming out of contract at the end of the year, or I guess more appropriately are entering the final few months of their current contracts. So let's run them down. What you got for me?
To me, there is one big name that I think could set off a very, very interesting offseason in the coaching and GM carousel. And that is Bob Bradley. Bob Bradley is out of contract at the end of the season with LAFC.
Wow.
He will be a free agent. Now, LAFC, of course, could...
I mean, they might.
They could extend his deal. They could extend his deal between now and then. But if they don't, he would be a free agent at the end of the season. It especially intrigues me because Toronto FC could be open. Michael Bradley is there in Toronto. His family really loves it there. I've been up there. I wrote a story about Michael in Toronto. I know his son really loves... being in Toronto, kind of thinks of himself as Canadian. That could be an intriguing opening for Bob Bradley. Yeah, that's right. You found out you're Canadian recently. if LAFC opened up, that would make for a very interesting coaching job. So that, to me, is the biggest name out there. The second biggest name we've learned as a potential is also in L.A., Dennis Teclosa, who has been the chief soccer officer for the Galaxy for the last few seasons. He was
2.5 seasons.
2019, 2020, and now 21, is coming out of contract. Now, the Galaxy have an option that they could simply trigger, and he'll be in LA for another year. But they haven't done that yet, according to our sources. So that's another one that's interesting, because what would the Galaxy do? We've written, Sam, going back to 2018, I think was the first time I wrote about the balance of power and the power dynamics that existed in the Galaxy when Ziggy came in, and you know, the fact that they have so many chefs in the kitchen. You've got Chris Klein, who's the president. You've got Jovan Karofsky. You know, they've always struggled with kind of finding one vision. So if right. Dennis DeClosa were to leave, would Greg Vanney be given more power as the head coach? Would they go sign another technical director?
No secret that Vanny's into that idea. That was part of the reason he left Toronto.
Yeah, and so you have that, and then the question would become, does Dennis DeClosa become now a target right now for a team like San Jose, for a team like Cincinnati, or, in my opinion, the most interesting one, considering his experience in the Mexican market, both with the national team and with Chivas, Houston? You know, could he be the right fit in Houston to help pivot that franchise to focus more on the Mexican-American community, the Latin-American community in Houston, and to capitalize on things that he has shown early on in LA a passion about, which is bringing the academy through a bit more, focusing on young players? That is an interesting job. And Sam, that also is a segue into another job. What do you got there?
Yeah, well, that's Houston, right? So Tab Ramos, the head coach, and Matt Jordan, the GM, they are both out of contract at the end of this year. There is, of course, new ownership in Houston, who did not hire either of those guys. And those guys do not have the best record, unfortunately for them. Ted Siegel, the new owner, he came aboard in June. I talked to him. I asked him then, like a day after he came on board, which was obviously, you know, very, very early. He's like, he didn't want to get into many specifics. And he's like, you know, I'm just starting out here, and this isn't specific to Tab and Matt. I want everybody in the organization to have a fair shake to succeed. I'm not sure that they've always had that. And my intention is to give them that fair shake. So, you know, we've seen Houston make a few moves since that interview, since that takeover. Most notably, you know, they signed a designated player, center back, in Teenage Hadebe. It felt like more of the same in terms of their pass moves, in terms of the price range and the profile and the pedigree. They paid $750,000 and an international spot for Corey Baird from LAFC. And they got a 22-year-old Panamanian international, Adalberto Carrasquilla. How'd I do there? That was pretty
very
good.
Very good job. Yes.
I speak good in Espanol and in English. On loan from a Spanish second division club. So all, like, you know, kind of par for the course in terms of the budgetary moves that we've seen from the Dynamo over the last 5-6 years. Ramos, in 41 games, he's averaging less than a point a game. They've won one road game under him since Jordan took over, which was before the 2015 season. They've won 10 road games in, they've played over 100. They're 11th in the West right now. They're on an 11-game winless streak. It's the longest in club history. Basically, what I'm trying to say is things aren't going great down there. And I don't think anyone would be surprised if those contracts were not renewed at the end of the season. I think, to be fair to those guys, Houston has a very low payroll, and they have had one for years. But as other teams have shown, that's not necessarily something that inhibits or prevents success completely. It makes it harder, but... yeah, I don't know. I don't know about the Dynamo. I think, you know, like I said, I don't think anyone would be shocked if there was an opening there
and
at the end of the year.
We talk about that market all the time as a sleeping giant, but that does require spend, ownership spend, not just on the field in the first team, but in the academy, which I think we know that they haven't really taken advantage of in the same way, especially of FC Dallas. But I think if you put the right GM there with the right money, and maybe it is Matt Jordan, maybe he does need a fair shake and he does need money.
Jordan has had some success there. They won an Open Cup. They made a Western Conference final, I think in, what was that, 2017, I want to say. Yeah. They've had good players. They've sold them, and they haven't really replaced them. So,
yeah, I mean, I think Matt Jordan would be... I think the interesting thing is here, as we go through these names, if the Galaxy don't re-up Dennis DeClosa, I absolutely think he would get hired by a club like Houston or Cincinnati. If Houston let go of Matt Jordan, I could see Matt Jordan being a fit as a number two immediately on somebody's staff and making them better in the same way, you know, Ned Grabavoy has in Portland under Gavin Wilkinson. Or maybe landing at a club like FC Cincinnati who says, hey, we think that the way you were able to manage money, you know, in Houston wasn't going to ever be a consistent climb up in that market, but you were able to get some peaks as you managed that budget. You know, we are spending more. Let's see what you can do. It's interesting to me that this story, as we reported it, is that you can see already, you know, if these decisions get made in a certain way, you can start to place these pieces kind of like risk into the next territory over. And you know, it kind of fits that old MLS model I always joke about of looking at guys' polo shirts at the combine to see what team they were on that year. But, you know, we'll see. There's more jobs opening up or potentially opening up. I shouldn't say opening up. There are more contracts coming up, more decisions to be made. Another of those decisions that need to be made is in Vancouver. Mark Dos Santos is coming out of contract. You know, they haven't had much success.
They've had a rough go, man.
Yeah.
All the Canadian teams have. So he hasn't been dealt exactly the cleanest hand. He blew it up, that roster, when he had control over it ahead of the 2019 season, his first year. It didn't work. They finished in last in the West. Last year, they actually showed some progress. You know, they made a run late in the year. They only finished one spot out of the playoffs. So it's not like they were awful last year. But this year, they haven't been good again. And to be fair, they haven't played a game at BC Place yet this season. It's coming up soon, but it hasn't happened yet. And it took forever for them to get their DP in. But that's not a barrier to success either, as the Rapids have sort of proved this year. So, you know, it hasn't been great. He's out of contract. I wouldn't really be surprised either way with Dos Santos. Like, I wouldn't be surprised if they didn't renew. I wouldn't be surprised if they said, hey, Mark, like, we think you have something. You've had a brutal hand. It's been unfair. And we'll give you a one-year kind of prove-it extension and see what you got next season, especially with these new signings that they've made. So I don't know. Actually, as I say that out loud, that feels like the most likely thing to me. What do you think?
Yeah, that makes sense to me. I mean, I think he... You know, I could see it going either way. It just depends, too, on, I think, the relationship between Mark Dos Santos and Axel Schuster and whether Schuster wants to bring in his own guy, you know, especially if he has an idea that he could find a better option in Europe, which sometimes people who come from European backgrounds think. We'll see. But
go with what you know, man.
Yeah.
Everyone does it.
You know, you kind of hire from within your circle. So
yeah,
we'll see what happens there. There is one name where I do think that person will be extended who's coming out of contract at the end of the season. That's Luis Musi in Orlando.
Yeah.
You know, since he arrived from FC Dallas, obviously Orlando City had not made the playoffs in their history. I think it would have been four seasons when he arrived. They missed the playoffs that fifth season in 2019. He hired Oscar Pareja. They've turned around since. They were very good in 2020. They finished fourth in the East. They were challenging for an MLS Cup. They've been better this year. They're in second place in the East. Oscar Pareja, according to our sources, has another year left on his contract. That alone makes me think that you at minimum reach out and try to extend by a year or potentially, I mean, if you really have confidence in this group, you extend everyone at once. You extend Oscar Pareja and you extend Musi. From what I understand,
why wouldn't you at this point?
Yeah. I mean, I think it's the easy and smart thing to do. I think Ricardo Moreira, who's the number two under Musi, who's well respected for his eye for talent, worked under Greg Berhalter in Columbus before he went to Orlando, also out of contract. Just lock them all up, lock up all three. Cause if you think about it, you know, for me, we talk about Bob Bradley being a big time free agent. If Oscar Pareja goes into a contract year next year,
yeah, you don't want that.
You don't want that. I mean, you know, that's the one thing I think is still missing from MLS a little bit. Like in most leagues around the world, Sam, you just wrote about Jesse Marsh in Leipzig, and you're writing about Tyler Adams in Leipzig as well. And one of the, you know, phenomenons there is all the players go to Bayern Munich, right? All the good players around the Bundesliga, they're all trying to beat Bayern Munich, and then as soon as they get good enough to maybe beat Bayern Munich just buys them. The coaches.
Yeah. Leipzig, the players. Nagelsmann, their coach, left for Bayern. Upamecano, their best player, maybe, left for Bayern. And maybe Sabitzer now. They're another one of their top players might be leaving here in the next couple of weeks.
So you have all of that. And that's very normal in some ways in the movement within leagues, right? When you have bigger clubs and smaller clubs.
I don't think it's great, by the way.
No, I agree. Well, it's especially not great with Bayern because they are the only big giant
nine-time
up there.
Reigning champions.
But if you look in the Premier League and you look in the Championship and you look in Serie A, you know, when you have four or five or six or seven bigger spending clubs and you have these other clubs who need different ways to generate money and funds and whatever, or have these shorter term contracts, you see coaches moving up, right? Moving up to those bigger clubs to try to reach that next level of their career. It doesn't really happen in MLS that often. You don't really see a coach perform
because
very,
you can
very
take
well.
Any club up, right? For the most part.
I just think that that's something that we could potentially see in the future. You know, like a guy like Jim Curtin performs really well in Philadelphia with a limited budget. You know, maybe a bigger shark comes and says, you know, hey, we're LAFC. Bob Bradley is leaving to go somewhere else. We're going to go hire Jim Curtin. You know, we're going to go hire. And I think Oscar Pereja has a great example of that. You know, if he goes into the last year of his contract, you know, this is not allowed per se, but maybe there's a few teams that are saying, hey, Oscar, if you come up out of that contract at the end of the year,
yeah,
we're pretty interested in
there
you.
Are ways, there are ways to legally tamper. You know, maybe an owner is on a preseason trip in the same city as a certain head coach and he makes a point to say hello and says he really respects his work. You know, like
it
maybe
happens.
There's something like that going
on. You know, yeah,
on.
It happens. That yeah. kind of stuff, it happens. No, it happens.
Nothing wrong with that.
There's nothing wrong with that.
A few other names real quick before we take a break. Rafa Wicki, Chicago Fire head coach. Obviously, they've had a tough go in his year and a half or plus at the helm. He is out of contract. The Fire have an option on him. That doesn't feel great if I'm Rafa Wicki. I'm just considering how things have gone for Chicago. Same for Yop Stom. Cincinnati has an option on him. Again, things haven't gone great there. I don't think that's necessarily all his fault. But with a new GM coming in, probably not feeling super awesome if I'm him. RSL, also Freddy Juarez, their head coach, also another guy in an option year. Who knows with that, man? Just given their ownership situation, I wouldn't be surprised if they just took the option and just run it back. Because yep. if they don't have an owner, I don't think they're going to go out and hire a new
totally
head coach.
Depends on what happens with that sale.
Yeah, so that's the rundown here. We'll take a quick break. We'll come back, talk Leagues Cup, talk some transfer data. We'll be right back. Stick with us.
Today's episode is brought to you by our old friends, Mack Weldon. Wouldn't it be nice if we could have things both ways, like a zero-calorie cheeseburger, internet ads in March that weren't just reminders to do your taxes, a dog that never needs walking after midnight when it's cold, a Manchester United that is consistently good instead of their current scattershot approach? Well, we tend to think of clothing as an either-or situation as well. People think looking sharp means starchy Oxfords and stiff chinos rather than effortless comfort. But it's possible to have it both ways. Mack Weldon makes timeless apparel with modern performance fabrics for guys who want to look and feel sharp without sacrificing comfort. From their light-as-air underwear to innovative anti-odor tees and versatile yet comfortable pants, Mack Weldon has a full range of clothes that never go out of style. I got a few things recently, including a long-sleeve polo, which I love, maybe the most comfortable t-shirt, which I also love, and my new favorite sweatpants, the Ace sweatpant. It's exactly what I described above, comfort and versatile, but still stylish. It's the type of sweatpant I can wear to pick up my kids from daycare and not think, I'm now wearing sweatpants in public. The other parents will judge me. Now I just think, judge away, nerds, because you will never be this comfortable unless you're also wearing a pair, in which case, high five. Mack Weldon is not flashy. It's just classic, always in style, and made from the world's most comfortable performance materials. They're designed to fit both your style and the demands of modern life. So get timeless looks with modern comfort from Mack Weldon. Go to MackWeldon.com and get 20% off your first order with promo code TSS. That's MackWeldon.com, promo code TSS to get 20% off your first order. Thank you to Mack Weldon for sponsoring today's episode.
This episode is brought to you by LinkedIn Jobs. When you're hiring for your small business, you want to find quality professionals that are right for the role. That's why you have to check out LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn Jobs has the tools to help you find the right professionals for your team faster and for free. LinkedIn, though, isn't just a job board. It helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. Speaking from experience, hiring for a small business, it's difficult when you're wearing so many hats. You might not have the time or the resources to hire. LinkedIn makes it very easy to complete the job hiring process. They even just launched a feature that helps you write job descriptions, making the process even easier and quicker. Comes very well recommended from this guy. And also 2.5 million small businesses who are using LinkedIn for hiring. On LinkedIn, did you know 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours? That's a quick turnaround to hire professionals on LinkedIn. So post your job for free at linkedin.com/TSS. That's linkedin.com/TSS to post your job for free. Terms and conditions apply. I thank you.
Today's episode is brought to you by Shopify. On the Total Soccer Show, we often talk about the importance of a manager who can clearly and effectively communicate their tactics and then a squad of players capable of executing that approach, but also adding some individual flair along the way. And that's the same relationship you're getting with Shopify. You tell them how you want things to work or what you need to get done, and they execute the game plan, sometimes even better than you could have expected, with Shopify Magic, their AI-powered all-star. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business, from the launch your online shop stage to the first real store stage, all the way to the did we just hit over a million orders stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. From what I've heard from family members who use Shopify for their online store, which has evolved into an amazing brick-and-mortar location, Shopify has helped with that growth, and with every step along the way, they've made it easier to process and track orders, run the business day-to-day, and help with long-term growth as well. So whether you're auctioning autographed jerseys or selling custom stadium prints, both of which are awesome, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, up to 36% compared to other leading commerce platforms. And you can sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, the aforementioned AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the United States and is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, their extensive help resources are there to support your success every step of the way, because businesses that grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial at shopify.com/TSS. That's all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/TSS now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. One more time, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/TSS.
And we are back. Allocation Disorder coming to you on a Thursday. Paul, Leagues Cup began this week. That famous, beloved, historical tournament, Leagues Cup, between the four best MLS teams that didn't qualify for the CONCACAF Champions League and the four best Liga MX teams that did not qualify for the CONCACAF Champions League. All games played in the United States, of course. There were three games earlier this week. I think there's a fourth happening maybe right now. Seattle, they rolled out a pretty serious lineup and they rocked Tigres 3-0. New York City FC, they also rolled out a pretty serious lineup. They drew Pumas 1-1 and then lost in penalties. Sporting Kansas City did not roll out a pretty serious lineup, and they got drubbed 6-1 at home by León. So that last game, the Kansas City game, which was actually the first game, sort of sparked a little bit of debate on social media, on Twitter, about the worthwhileness of the League's Cup as an enterprise. And I think we can start here by saying, yes, it is contrived. Yes, it got invented out of thin air. The initial edition in 2019 was like super rushed. They sprung it, I think, in like May for a July tournament, so nobody even had time to plan. It comes at a time of year this season when MLS teams are already playing like every 3 days. They're playing league games, and that was why Kansas City rotated their squad. So I think we can start there, right? It's contrived. It doesn't really mean anything right now. But as the years go on, and as these games maybe get good, it could start to mean something. And my question, I guess, is, yeah, it's contrived, but is it worth it? Like, is the goal worthwhile? Like, is the juice worth the squeeze here? Because right now it's not great. but maybe in the future it could become
something. I mean, I think it's worth it. I think if you look at why they're playing it in the United States, it shows from a business perspective why it's worth it. For Liga MX, not just for MLS, and probably more so in some ways for Liga MX. You know, they need to commercialize their product in the United States and take advantage of the massive audiences that tune in for their games and for the massive fan base that exists for these teams. So that to have a footprint in the United States is really important for those teams and for that league. So for them, commercially, it's extremely effective and it's extremely important and extremely worth it. For Major League Soccer, it's only worth it if the teams take it seriously. So was it worth it for Sporting Kansas City to be in the tournament this year? No, it wasn't. Will it be worth it in the long term? I think so. You know, MLS is trying to find ways, shortcuts in a way, to credibility. I talk about it all the time, the perception gap. They're trying to convince fans that this league is better than what they think it is. And by fans, I mean casual sports fans, casual soccer fans. And, you know, when they conduct studies, when they did the BCG study, which we talk about on this podcast all the time, or when they do focus groups, one of the things they talk about is being the best league, at least regionally. And so competing against Liga MX teams and showing that you can be competitive is important. And we know the issues that exist for MLS teams in CONCACAF Champions League and playing important games in preseason. And this was a chance to increase the number of games against Mexican teams, increase the probability of competitive games because they're one-offs instead of double legs. They're all in the United States. They're in the middle of the MLS season. Gives them a chance to be competitive. And to this point, it hasn't been. So when those teams start taking it seriously, when these rosters start to improve because of increased spending and these games actually become competitive, then yes, I think it will be worth it. Right now, it does have a feeling of, I just saw the Ruckus tweet about it because Orlando City just lost 1-0 to Santos Laguna in the other quarterfinal. You know, it does have the feeling of an ACC Big Ten challenge. That's kind of what it feels like right now.
Man, I love the ACC Big Ten challenge. What a
tournament. You know, it's always that game where Northwestern beats Georgia Tech and people are like,
I mean, always? That happens like twice a decade.
It always
happens. Let's slow down a little bit here.
Okay, Bill Carmody and Chris Collins are undefeated in the ACC Big Ten Challenge as far as this podcast is concerned.
Oh, man. This podcast is getting even more obscure. That's what we needed. Bill Carmody. My goodness. If you are out there and you are a fan of Billion Dollar Bill Carmody with his Einstein's Cup and you know what I'm talking about, then like please tweet at me. Like just like tweet at me like, Sam, I know what you're talking about. I see you. I hear you.
I have a basketball
like,
behind
but
me
if you don't,
by Chris Collins that I now every once in a while look at and say, like to punt this thing across the street is what I'd like to do.
No one even knows. No one listening to this has any clue.
It doesn't matter. That's why. The point is that it doesn't matter. Just like right now, the League's Cup doesn't matter. And in fact, I think the League's Cup is hurting.
The League's Cup is Northwestern basketball.
No, MLS is Northwestern basketball. Occasionally does something to draw you in and then immediately disappoint you.
Oh, that's so savage.
it's true on both counts. That's the disappointing thing with League's Cup is here's another competition where we're trying to showcase the league, trying to show that the league is making progress. And what it really is more evidence that the league isn't making as much progress as it thinks it is. And it needs to do more.
I'm not sure about
that just think
part.
You're one team.
Just because they're losing one-off games in the middle of a busy schedule.
Well, when are they supposed to win? They're losing Champions League games.
Well, Seattle
losing
won.
Champions
Seattle
League
won.
Games. Okay, so let's do one-off instead.
NYCFC lost in penalties. It's a coin flip.
Again, we can keep pointing to this stuff, but they're always on the losing end. They have to.
I don't know. I wouldn't put much stock in it. I'm not putting much stock in it either direction in this case. Like if MLS beats a Liga MX team in League's Cup or if an MLS team wins League's Cup, I don't think that means anything. And pretty much the same thing in reverse, right? If Liga MX teams beat MLS teams, if they beat the pants off them, if they go on and win League's Cup, then I don't think that really means anything either. Because like, look at this. Look at the timing of this tournament, man. Like what kind of message is the league sending? Like that's the thing, because like I think I agree with you in so many ways about like, is this worthwhile? Right? Like, well, Liga MX is the most popular league in the United States in terms of soccer leagues, right? If you have MLS teams beat Liga MX teams in this tournament, then it shows Liga MX fans that, hey, MLS is a pretty good league too. Maybe those fans will then become bigger fans of MLS. Maybe they'll be converts. If you have more fans of MLS, you have more money in the league. More money in the league means better players and, you know, so on and so forth, right? So I'm not saying it's a bad idea. I'm just questioning the what message it sends to these teams, right? Because if you're Peter Vermes, or if you're Brian Schmetzer, or Oscar Pereja, or Ronnie Dela, you're one of the coaches of these four teams involved, are you supposed to sacrifice league games for this? Right? No one's gonna get fired or get an extension or a raise or a bonus because they won League's Cup. Right? But if you miss the playoffs, your job might be in trouble. So that's the part of this that's hard for me. Right? Champions League, that's a real reward. If you go out and win Champions League, yeah, you can sacrifice some league games for that. Because that Champions League run, that's going to pay dividends for you as an individual, as a player, or as a coach, or as a general manager, right? There's real prestige there. And right now, League's Cup is kind of in that in-between phase where it's like, there isn't the prestige yet. And like you said, like unless MLS teams take it seriously, it's never going to arrive. So it's kind of awkward. And I don't really know how you solve that problem other than just like by edict.
Yeah,
like from the league office that you are going to play your starters and you're going to like it.
Yeah, I mean, there is only one way to make it something that's serious and that matters. And that's playing your serious players and making the trophy matter. You know, like you have to create it. The history of the sport in this country is not long enough to make... To have a competition exists that has always been there, or that, I mean, even in Europe, those things were created. Champions League didn't always exist.
Yeah, I mean, you got to start.
There
somewhere.
Has to be a real incentive. They have to treat it, you know, like Europa League. They have to say this is a real chance for you to prove something if you weren't good enough to make it to Champions League. It's not there yet. And it's not going to be when Sporting Kansas City trots out its USL side at home to get smashed 6-1. And that makes it a lot harder for the next year's cup to be taken seriously.
Well, I think we saw MLS teams take this one more seriously than they took the first version, right? With three of them. I haven't even seen Orlando's lineup, but I saw that Nani
was
playing.
They took it seriously.
So with three of them taking it seriously and one of them winning, right? That's progress, I guess. So maybe give it 2, 3, 4, 5 years. I guess my next question is, does MLS have the patience to actually stick it out?
Oh, yeah. Right? They'll have the patience because this is a bubble.
I mean, we tried this once before.
Bubble. This is
Superliga?
Yeah, but now they have a real incentive to...
Man, Superliga had a real incentive. They had $1 million cash in a briefcase for the winner. I'm not making that up.
They have
an real
incentive to try to drive more interest between these two leagues. And they have an incentive in that they need to expand the fan base. And the way you, again, this is a way to expand the fan base. This is a way to reach Mexican-American audience or Mexicans in the United States who watch these teams to draw them in. I mean, I was at a game.
It's a TV property to sell.
TV property to sell with real TV audiences that tune in. You know, all of those things matter. And I brought this up before, but I was out in Bridgeview when the Fire played in this in the first year. They played Cruz Azul.
First year?
And the stadium was packed with Cruz Azul fans. Packed.
Yeah,
if that's what it takes to draw them in,
what has that ever gotten anyone?
No, but you need to start trying to get people to your stadium in whatever ways that you can, whether it's fill the bowl in Orlando or whether it's stuff like this, and then you entertain them. That's important too. You know, you bring them in and then you entertain them with good soccer. And there is good soccer in this league. There is occasionally good soccer in this league. And
what did you say 5 minutes
not
ago?
Not only is there occasionally good soccer, there's occasionally really bad but entertaining soccer.
That's my favorite kind of MLS. It's the best kind.
I mean, you know, that's San Jose, Vancouver. That's entertainment, baby.
Yeah, baby.
So
NYCFC Orlando in the playoffs.
I am disappointed.
Year.
I was disappointed. I got a text message from somebody. I was out having a, you know, a nice glass of wine with a friend, and I got a text message from somebody who's like a casual soccer fan in this country, who had tuned in, who had turned, was flipping through channels and saw League MX team playing an MLS team and said, this Sporting Kansas City team is trash. MLS is trash. And I was like, dang, you know, like that, that's missed a missed opportunity.
Yeah.
I mean, it's totally anecdotal and it's one person, but like, that's the result. Like that's the demographic it's just, that you're like, looking
that's the
for.
But that's the tension though, because it's not, why should Peter Vermes have to carry the torch for
everyone
the league?
Everyone does, man. Everyone who works in the league has to carry the torch for the league.
I know, but it's not, but it's coming at a cost to these four teams, right? And like, is that a fair sacrifice to ask them to make? Like, this is supposed to be a reward for finishing high in the table? I don't know. I see it as like kind of like a punishment. It's a burden.
You got to make the trophy matter somehow. I don't know. What else do you say? You got to make it matter. You got to make it have some prestige. You got to make it like Atlanta United. They've tried, right? With Campeones Cup.
That's right. They celebrated it like it was the Campeones League. I don't know. I don't hate that the league is trying it. I really don't. Like, I think it makes sense to try stuff like this. It's just tough. There's pros and cons to it. And I understand why coaches and individual teams might not want to throw out their best players. Especially this time of year in this particular season when you're looking at a game every 3 days for the next few months, you know, and it's summer and all these guys have heavy loads and so on and so forth. So I don't know. If I'm a coach, I wouldn't want to sacrifice and risk injury to my guys who are going to get me hired and or fired, right? In the games that really matter down the line. Because like, can you imagine if one of these big stars gets hurt in League's Cup and is out for the rest of the year? Like if Alan Pulido goes down,
you know,
Maxi
it's the
Morales.
Risk every time you take the field. It's a risk. What are you gonna?
It is. It is.
It's like,
but
it's like when Atlanta
I would feel
freaked
crappy.
Out that Miles Robinson got hurt when he was away at national team camp, and then held him out of every single Olympic qualifier and non-necessary release. And it was like it's like the most childish reaction ever. You're not the first team in the world to have a player get hurt during international window. Get over it. That's how I feel about that. And that's how I feel about if you got hurt. Oh, if you get hurt during League's Cup. If you're scared of getting hurt, don't take the field at all. Don't take the field in a midweek league game. Don't
Tell
take
them.
The field in a League's
yeah.
Cup.
Yeah.
So get out of here with that sauce stuff.
Yeah. League's Cup matters. All right. Got it. Point taken, Paul.
I'm just saying. Don't Relax. Tell me to pay attention to it and then get smashed 6-1 with your USL team. That's what I'm talking about with they draw you in. They draw you in. They tell us. They tell us.
Vermes had some quotes.
They tell us that.
Yeah, Vermes had some quotes pregame. Pay attention to
it.
We're going to
try. They tell us that stuff. Yeah. They tell us and they tell the journalists before the season, League's Cup is going to matter more. There's a real emphasis on from the league. The owners came out and said it. Merritt Paulson was tweeting about it. League's Cup, you're going to see. It's very serious competition. And then that happens. That's Northwestern basketball. They're drawing you in. And then what happens? Nothing. Nothing's on the end of the line, folks. They lose. It's not exciting.
They lose. Every game they lose.
It's not fun.
And you're just an idiot
miserable.
If you continue get
just
sucked
miserable.
In. Hey, they made the tournament once.
I had a great time in
on that
City.
Note,
great time.
On that note, let's take a break. We'll be right back with some transfer chatter. Some, I don't know. We'll see what we get into. And we are back again. Third and final segment of this week's show. Let's talk a little bit about transfer data. We hinted at this a little bit last week and maybe even the week before, but I decided to dive into the numbers and actually figure it out, see if it actually bore fruit. So the transfer market is down all across Europe. You know, it's picked up a little bit here in recent weeks. Jack Grealish going to Man City for 100 million pounds, I believe. The Messi move, obviously, freeing some things up and creating some dominoes. Maybe Harry Kane's going for 150 mil, perhaps. That's the latest rumor. To Man City. So things are happening now, but it has been slow over in Europe. Much, much slower than a usual summer. It has not been slower in MLS, interestingly enough. I went back and I looked at the last 5 summer transfer windows, secondary transfer windows, which, of course, just ended last week for MLS. MLS teams spent about $50 million this summer, Paul. That's roughly double the amount, the second closest amount that they spent in any of the previous 4 summer windows. The previous high was in 2019. 2020, when the pandemic hit, less than $20 million spent on transfer fees. And this is transfer fees only, loans not included. And the data is pulled from Transfer Market and from some reporting that I've been doing. So it's kind of wild. MLS is like the only league in the world that has seen an uptick in summer spending. And it's not just an uptick, it's 2.5 times the previous summer's amount. And there's a few reasons that go into this, but Paul, what's your kind of like immediate reaction?
Well, my immediate reaction is it's young money. That's my immediate reaction. There are more slots that owners can go and spend. And this is indicative of the fact that there have been a number of owners in the league who have been waiting to spend more and haven't been allowed to, and now they're allowed to. The other thing is that
let me put some numbers on that before you move on. There were 6 young money signings this summer, by my count, for a total of $18.75 million. So if you take the previous next highest total, which was like 26, and you add 18.75, well, then you're at 44, nearly 45, and then you're almost at the $50 million total right there. So just to illustrate what Paul was saying, it is young money. There are a few other things too, but
it's young money, and it's the fact that Major League Soccer is a league of billionaires, and most leagues in the world are not. And that financial strength is, I think, the biggest. Of course, it is the biggest asset this league has. What's interesting, Sam, I think you and I were having a conversation about this the other day. And it's, you know, it's what's interesting.
They all bleed together.
My brain's not working, as you know, Sam.
You speak good, though.
Occasionally speak good. Never write good, but speak good occasionally. I think that it's amazing to me that when you look around the league and you look at the amount of money that's been spent in Major League Soccer over the last, let's say, since 2015, the amount of money that's been spent on expansion fees, the amount of money that's been spent on stadiums, the amount of money that's been spent on training facilities, billions of dollars.
Yeah, and that's before you even get to the Argentine League.
Billions of dollars spent on infrastructure. It's almost funny how little is spent on the actual product on the field comparatively. These owners have billions of dollars, hundreds of millions of dollars they're willing to spend that they are
they got
spending.
It in their couch
they
cushions.
They are spending it.
Yeah.
And understandably, you know, you look at that, a lot of those are real estate plays with the stadium. You know, that drives a lot of revenue, whereas the players don't. But at a certain point, you have to start to wonder if you have all of these billionaire owners who are capable of spending and they're building these facilities that are better than many, many, many places around the world. At some point, when are you going to start filling them with players who are equal to or approaching the level of those facilities? And so when I think about young money, I've been kind of the more realistic or negative person here about the let's just preaching caution, give these kids some time to develop. You know what? But what I see here is this trend. I see this trend of owners wanting to spend. The moment they're given a chance to spend more, they do.
They rush into
they
it.
They go
yeah.
and do it. And so give them more chances to spend. Add more uncapped spaces. Get rid or increase the cap significantly. You know, and lose some of the restrictions that
lose the
buckets.
That
exist.
Yeah.
Give these owners the freedom that they're looking for that will give you the opportunity to make this league better. How much better, we don't know, but better for sure.
Yeah. One other thing that I wanted to add just on kind of why the transfer spend went up this season. I think a lot of it has to do with the schedule and the fact that it was so much later, the season start. Basically, you could buy a guy at the start of the summer window and you could have him for 20 games, right? Whereas in the past, if you bought a guy at the start of the summer window, you might have him for 15 tops, right? Whereas that's what you're getting 17 if you buy him at the end of the window in the summer. So I think that made a difference too. But I don't know. It's interesting.
Depending on the visa process.
Depending on the visa process.
Now.
For
and
sure,
I think also the where the window fell, you know, because it fell later in the European season, it opened things up where teams were a little bit more willing to sell players early in the window for MLS teams. That mattered too, I think.
Yeah, no doubt. But it's interesting because I've been reading a lot of the coverage around this Messi PSG signing, right? And a lot of it, there's ancillary stuff kind of about financial fair play and UEFA and regulation, how much is too much, how much is not enough, and where do you split the middle ground? And I think MLS has a good system, man. They just need to like allow a little bit more freedom. They have the safeguards in place, and you can keep the safeguards in place while still kind of expanding and like allowing more spending while keeping some safeguards in so that teams don't overspend into oblivion or so that teams don't, you know, some don't run away with the entire league, right? Because I don't think that's an attractive thing for me or you or anybody else listening to this.
They have so much wiggle
room. Yeah, I know. But it's like they have the foundation. They have the structure. They have the construction. And like, when are they going to just put the pedal to the metal, man? Put the pedal to the metal, baby.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with you. They
slam it, slam the accelerator.
Easy now because the rules are in place. It's a lot harder to put on a salary cap, right? To convince every team
after the fact,
cap is the right way to go, because Bayern Munich doesn't want a salary cap. Barcelona, Real Madrid, they don't want a salary cap. Manchester City doesn't want a salary cap. They want the status quo to stay.
They just want
right?
They just want the really Super League. Yeah.
If they choose the Super League over that, I think. But MLS has a salary cap. Now you can play with where that salary cap goes and what it looks like, and start to ease some of these restrictions where, again, you still have the, like you said, you have the protections in place, but you have limitations that keep things competitive, that keep owners from getting in over their heads. And, you know, it would be difficult for most owners in this league to get in over their head. Let's be honest here. So I just think, you know, to me, what this is a sign of is owners want to spend. And when the league gives them a chance. Some owners want to spend. And even owners, some owners who don't want to spend are spending. Because when you have the chances to do it and your opponents are doing it, it forces you to do it. That's the real reason why we don't see the movement, because there are limitations to what those owners who don't want to spend want to be forced into, right? They're like, okay, I'll go with three more young players where if I spend like $1 million here, my fans will be happy.
It's always me in the middle. It's always
that's
the
real problem. Yeah. But at a certain point,
well, and they can stay competitive while controlling costs. And like, whatever, it is what it is. This is something that we've talked about ad nauseum. But like, I don't know. You look at this Leagues Cup thing, and you look at the CCL, and like Philly's gonna go play America, and like Philly's budget is probably like 10% of Club America's, and like, what are they gonna do tonight? They're probably just gonna sit back and like pray that Sergio Santos scores on the break. Like, we're still doing this? Like, how many years has it been? It's been 10 years since RSL should have beat Monterrey in the final, and MLS still hasn't really made a ton of progress in this competition, you know? And it's just like, all right, like, we're like taking the most minuscule of minuscule steps. Like, can we just like make that stride
a
little bit longer?
And young money is a big deal, right? We have had different people telling us, or some people believe it is. Like, there, I was just gonna say,
it is a big deal, but how much is that gonna raise?
That's the question. That's the question, and it's kind of like a trial balloon on this, and that's the frustration of
it's sort of is, but MLS teams have been using these DP spots on guys like this. You know, young guys from South America or Latin America, and how many have come in and really done well? And how many have come in and been sold
on? We've talked about this before.
Not that
many. How many young money eligible players have come to the league in a DP spot and been successful? One.
I don't know.
It'd be an interesting article to write. One off the top of my head.
Diego Rossi.
Would he have qualified? He came in at 21. He was right on the border.
I guess his salary would have been too high.
Yeah, he doesn't even count. Fabian Castillo is the one I can think of. And it took him 3 years.
I'm sure there are others.
We'll have to go back. But there's that's the one who I think would fall in into the salary range and the age range.
I think Mauro Diaz would too. Anyway, now you
it's
got
been
me thinking.
A long while since those guys. You know, it's hard to do it. It's hard to do it at this age. And that's why it's a good thing that they're investing more money. It's a good thing that they're trying to find young players that they can sell. It'll be a good thing if they start to sell some of these players successfully. We haven't seen it happen yet.
No, and it's not a bad idea. It's just like...
It's just another bucket with another arbitrary restriction on it.
Yeah.
Instead of just saying, hey, owners, you want to spend more money? Okay, you have three more
But hey, spots. Paul, they are spending more money, unlike everyone else in the world.
That's what we hope to see coming out of COVID too, because we knew that this league has the financial strength to do it.
Mm-hmm. And now they are, right? And they're just doing it in the weird, convoluted, very restrictive MLS way.
Give us more.
Right? And that's, you know, just more rules, please. More rules. That's all we need. All right. Well, I think on that note, this has been an episode of Allocation Disorder. I don't know if we spoke good or not, but we tried. Thanks so much for listening. Thanks for sticking with us. I'm Sam Staskull. He's Paul Tenorio. We'll be back next week.